and welcome to First Things First. Happy New Year to you. I'm Jenna Wolf. This is Nick Wright. Bart Scott is filling in for Chris Carter today. Boys, it is nice to spend the first of the year with both of you.
We all party, man.
Happy New Year,
Mr. Nick Wright.
I saw him at the Shake 'Em Up Club last night.
To the hours of what, 7:30 p.m.?
No, come on. We've been going straight since yesterday.
Straight since yesterday, said none of us. Big show today, kicking off the year right. Eagles could still bring back Carson Wentz. Tom Brady knows how tough the road to the Super Bowl will be, but our very big story this morning. Yesterday, four more teams fired their coaches. So now the Dolphins, Broncos, Bengals, and Cardinals have head coaching vacancies, bringing the grand total to eight teams. Nick, what's your reaction to a quarter of the league having head coaching vacancies?
It's no problem. These teams are just going to go to the head coaching tree, pluck off a guy. I mean, where do they think these good coaches are going to come from? And what they did in Arizona with Steve Wilkes is an embarrassment. To fire a guy after 1 year when the quarterback he thought he was going to play got hurt. Sam Bradford got hurt. You have Josh
surprise,
Rosen who's not
Very
right,
shocked.
Who's not ready yet. And to fire him after 1 year, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't know where these great coaches are going to come from. I know that this is where we're at. Adam Gase gets fired and immediately goes to the top of the list of available candidates because there aren't enough head coaches to go around, evidently.
It's just the good old boys club, and it's rarely any new blood infused into head coaching. Usually you go from coordinator to coach, back to coordinator, back to position coach, back to head coach. And it just goes on, and eventually you get cycled out with the Brian Billicks, with the Fossils of the world, but then you continue to come back. Hell, throw Rex's name in there. Might as well.
Rex, I think, will take either Miami job. He wanted the Miami college job. It's gone now. Now the head coach job.
All right, on to the NBA, where James Harden has been on fire. Old school NBA jam, Nick. He dropped 43 last night. I actually knew what that was.
He's on fire.
His fourth straight 40-point game. So the Rockets have now won 10 of their last 11. Nick, put Harden's hot streak in perspective for us.
I mean, it's as far as scoring-wise, it is. I tweeted this last night. It's accurate. In modern NBA history, you can count on less than one hand how many guys have done this over this long of a stretch. He's done it. Jordan did it in the late 80s, and Kobe did it in his 35-point-per-game season. Like, that's the list of guys who have done this basically in the modern NBA. And he's, by the way, doing it while averaging nearly double-digit assists. His team is winning. It is as good of an offensive stretch over a month of basketball as we have seen since Wilt Chamberlain.
You can make the argument that he could have been the MVP for the last three seasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people are really starting to accept his game and understand, what he brings to the table. The fact that he's able to be a scoring point guard, so to speak. Just imagine, if they would have been the first big three and they would have kept him instead of going with Serge Ibaka and what they could have had in OKC. They messed up.
All right, let's talk about LeBron James for a second. Still one of the game's greatest players in year 16. That's according to basketball pundits. But it's also according to LeBron James, apparently. He recently laid out what he believes was his defining moment in the NBA. It was beating the Warriors in the 2016 finals. Here's what LeBron said that moment meant to him.
That one right there made me the greatest player of all time.
For so many reasons.
I was super, super ecstatic to win one for Cleveland because of the 52-year drought. Like, I was ecstatic. Like, obviously, I showed that the first wave of emotion was when everyone saw me crying. Like, that was all for 52 years of everything the sports had gone on in Cleveland. And then after I stopped, I was like, that one right there made you the greatest player of all time. Everybody was just talking how they were the greatest team of all time. Like, it was the greatest team to ever assemble. And for us to come back, the way we came back in that fashion, I was like, you did something special. That's probably one of the only times in my career I felt like, oh, like you did something special. I haven't really had time to really like sit back and think, but that was a moment. Crazy.
All right, Nick, you agree with LeBron? Would you look back on that and say that was the moment?
That's the exact moment, and he's exactly right, because up until that run, LeBron was already, as far as individual statistics, on pace to become probably the greatest individual statistical player ever. It's going to be him, Kareem, and Wilt. Like, that was it. But what he didn't have was the overall team success. And what that Game 7 of that 2016 NBA Finals did was it cemented or put a cap on the greatest five-year run any basketball player has ever had. Like, here's the five-year run. He ended the original Big Three in Boston with a 45-15-5 on the road, down 3-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then beat the team that Bart was talking about could have become the Big Three, KD, Russ, and Harden, in the NBA Finals. The next year, his team won 27 straight games. He won not only MVP again for the fourth time, but Game 7 of the NBA Finals, hit the jump shot to seal it in a 37-12 game. The following year, went back to the Finals, averaged 28 a game on 57%, and the guy guarding him got Finals MVP. The next year, went back to the Finals, with his second-best player being Matthew Dellavedova, and the guy guarding him won Finals MVP, despite LeBron going 36-13-9 for the NBA Finals. And then that year, down 3-1 against a 73-win team, without home court advantage, with everything stacked against him, he goes 41-16-7, 41-8-11, and then 27-11-11 in a game where he hit the free throw to ice the game and had the single greatest defensive play in the history of the sport. That is the best five-year run in the history of the game, and that run made him the greatest player in the history of the game. It's not – what's up, Bart?
Best five-year run ever?
Yeah, well, tell me a better five-year run.
How about MJ from 90 to 98?
Okay, but that's – here's
running,
the
right, and he took a year off. If he didn't take a year off, he would have won seven in a row.
Okay, well, so find me the 5 years, Bart.
And let's talk about the assist that he got from the NBA because they suspended, you know, Draymond Green. How about that
one? You know, it's a really good point because the game without Draymond, he scored 41 points. And then Draymond was back for game six, and he scored 41 points. And Draymond was there for game seven, and he had a triple-double to win it.
It would have never went that far. If you know the NBA.
Well, tell Draymond to keep his hands to himself.
They put one in. They put one out, man. Come on.
But you said,
I give him some credit because he took Cleveland. You know, he won a championship for Cleveland, mm-hmm. which that we know how difficult that is. But him saying he's the greatest player of all time, come on.
Well, you said
come on,
you mentioned Jordan. Jordan didn't have a five-year stretch better than that. There's no five-year stretch any player has ever had where they've won more than three finals MVPs.
Are we both using...
There isn't one.
Are we both using the same things to determine what makes the best player? You're using
it's,
more
it's
stats
not numbers,
than you're using
man.
More
you talk about fluffed up numbers, man. Of course, it's a different game. It's a different era.
Okay.
So, of course, you can put up more numbers and more statistics, especially when you're the biggest player on the court and nobody can't stop you and you can run through. Yeah, I mean, MJ played in an era where it was more skill, I believe, in NBA per player. And it was a more of a physical type of game. It was a more slowed down pace. And listen,
I just want to make sure I understand, just real quick. Because the point you just made was LeBron's bigger and stronger than everybody, right? And not the centers.
And the rules are offensively slack.
Okay, so LeBron's bigger and stronger than everybody, yet he wouldn't have thrived in an era that rewarded physicality?
But tell me this. Uh-huh. What great player did LeBron deny a championship to?
Kevin Durant, he did it.
He got it eventually.
Okay, no.
Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, all sitting ringless because of MJ.
Yeah, absolutely correct. But you asked who he denied a championship to. He beat Kawhi Leonard for a championship, beat Tim Duncan for a championship, beat Kevin Durant for a championship.
Lost to Dirk Nowitzki.
James Harden, absolutely. And that's what made that run so impressive.
He ran to the West to run away from the Golden State Warriors to try and get Anthony Davis to come because he need help.
He ran from the West to run away from the Warriors. I don't know how that makes sense. However, the Nowitzki finals, the Mavs finals, is the lowest point for any all-time great player ever. The problem for people that want to deny what they're seeing is what he followed that up with is the greatest five-year stretch. Pick your favorite player. None of them have more finals MVPs over 5 years than LeBron did in that stretch. None of them have a more impressive individual or team resume than LeBron does over that stretch. You say LeBron ran to the West. Why did Jordan not win eight straight? He left the sport, right?
Yeah.
And then the one he came, did he leave for two full years or a year and a half? Year and a half, right? Because when he came back, he played that season. Something happened. They didn't win the championship.
Let's see. Six is greater than three, right?
Yeah, listen, you can always count the rings. You can always do the argument of count the rings, but in that case, then it's Russell number one, Kareem and Jordan are tied, Robert Horry's got to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Like, there's some guys that drove the bus and there's some guys that were passengers.
So Bill Russell is without question the greatest player of all time. Without question. He got 11 of them.
He's the greatest winner of all time.
Okay, so, all right. So
George's both the best. You know, he's the
Jordan's
best,
both?
Best player. He's
got
it. The best player.
Okay.
No, he's the best player of all time.
LeBron got that right.
All right.
No, liar.
LeBron got that right.
No.
Jenna?
Why don't we do something where we can both agree? Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. They took care of business in Week 17. Good win for the team. Good performance from the quarterback, Dak Prescott. Prescott will need another one next week against the Seahawks. He'll also need Ezekiel Elliott. So Zeke won the rushing title despite sitting out Sunday's game. His head coach, Jason Garrett, said the move keeps him, quote, fresher going forward. Bart, what do the Cowboys need out of Zeke if they're going to go ahead and beat this Seattle Seahawks team?
They need him to set the tone. They're on the, like I said, Ezekiel Elliott's on a collision course with Bobby Wagner. He's going to have to put his foot in his chest. He's going to have to say, foot in chest, repeat. They're going, listen, the only way you beat a team like the Seattle Seahawks is to out-physical them, right? And you got it. You can't try and run around them. You can't try and gadget them. It's only one thing they respect, physicality. You got to say, listen, this is going to be one of these in the phone booth type of games. You're going to have to set the tone. You set the tone early in practice by saying, listen, this is the game plan. We're coming downhill. We're putting the ball on our best player. We're going to take shots. That's the only chance they have, because if they try and not stick to their identity, who they are, then the advantage is going to go to the Seattle Seahawks.
And here's the other thing. They need Zeke to be great. And he, by the way, since the Titans game, he's at 100 yards from scrimmage in every single game leading into Week 17 where he didn't play. He has been great. But they don't only need him to be great to score. They need him to be great to keep their defense, the Dallas defense, off the field. Because quietly, this last month, that Dallas defense, it really did peak with that Saints performance. And since then, it's been leaking a little bit of oil. They've given up 23, 23, 20, and 35 points in their final month of football. So I don't know that you can just say, our defense is going to hold Seattle down to 16 points. We're only going to need 17 to win. I think Dallas has to look at this game saying, we're probably going to need 27 points to win this football game, and we're going to have to keep Seattle's offense off the field, because Russell Wilson has shown time and again this year in his career, he's a great fourth quarter quarterback, right? That the playoffs, that fourth quarter can be the entire game. He has the ability to be a drop back 40 times a game passer if they need him to be. So that's why Zeke's got to keep them off the field.
Do you trust, though, that if they do find themselves far behind, that Dak will go out there and maybe can just from what you've seen in the last couple weeks, start getting them back into it?
Well, this is going to be on Scott Linehan, right? He's going to have to try and design some explosive plays. Understanding that Seattle at his core is a cover three team, they're going to have to move Amari Cooper around so that they can't get that, you know, high safety third cornerback on top of him and take him away. They're going to have to put him in a slot, because what kills cover three is four verticals, right? It forces you to have to communicate. It forces one of those safeties to have to say, I have to carry a receiver. And it's going to be up to Dak to find that safety that's carrying the receiver. They don't have a Cam Chancellor. They don't have an Earl Thomas. They have backups and replacements for those guys. That's where you're going to have opportunities to get your shots. Not on the outside. I think that Seattle's solid on the outside. They're going to play so deep. You're going to get those opportunities in the slot.
The Chargers, the Saints, the Rams, the Chiefs, these are all teams that this year have shown they can fall down by multiple scores and come back to tie a game, come back to take a lead, come back to win a game. The Cowboys and the Ravens are the two teams in this tournament that I would say if at any point they're down 10 points, the game's over. Yeah. I don't think they have a path to victory where they can come back from double digits down. Like anybody, you can get down a touchdown, no problem. But if you are down multiple scores, what that allows you to do, because it removes the Cowboys' running game to a degree, it puts the onus on Zeke, and it allows a team like Seattle just say, oh, this is perfect. All we want to do is run the ball anyway.
Right.
I saw Seattle in a game against the Rams. They almost came back to win. 5 minutes left, down 12, running the football because it's who they are. That's down 12. What are they going to do if they get up 12? They're just going to run the football. So, no, I do not think they have the firepower if they get down multiple scores to come back. But nobody wants to be down multiple scores. Dallas is at home. Dallas is the favorite. Dallas should be in position where this is a three-point game one way or another the whole game. They got arguably the best kicker in the playoffs on the NFC side in Brett Maher, a guy they cut Dan Bailey to keep, and it's been proven right. Have it come down to something like that, because they're not going to win a shootout and they're not going to have a great comeback victory.
All right. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, happy
MJ,
years.
I got you, baby.
I know you
Send
do.
Me a pair of kicks.
Coming up, the drama in Pittsburgh. You see why you went there?
Shoes
just
better than
even
bricks,
more
too.
Strange. That's ahead on First
That is
first.
True. Michael Jordan, greatest marketer of all time. There's no question about it.
Back here on First Things First, CBS Sports Radio host Damon Amendola joins us now. Good morning, Damon.
Yay.
Happy New Year.
What up, brother? How we doing?
Happy we New are Year. Doing
Thank
great.
You.
Thanks for being with us.
I know this guy. I know this guy.
Wow. Good stuff. All right, Damon, let's talk about the Patriots. They ended the 2018 season on a high note, beating the brakes off the New York Jets. The months prior, however, more of a medium note, a low note, not great, but also not an issue since they still earned themselves a bye for the ninth straight season. Tom Brady says he knows the Patriots will have to be at their very best heading into the postseason.
This time of year, it's just figuring out a way to get the job done. You know, there's a lot of good football teams playing right now. You know, some teams have played better early in the year. Some teams have played better late in the year. And, you know, this time of year, it's you don't play a good game, and that's your season. And you're watching other teams move on. The awareness is heightened. The focus is heightened. The execution needs to be that way. And, you know, we have a big challenge. Whoever we play is going to be a great football team. We're not going to be able to afford anything less than our best.
All right, Damon, it's going to be a bit of an uphill road, I think, for the Patriots, despite all the success they've had. How slim is the Patriots' margin of error this postseason?
Extraordinarily slim. I would say the only reason I gave them any chance to go to the Super Bowl is because they got the bye. Look, in the Super Bowl era of Belichick and Brady, they've never played Wild Card Weekend and gotten to the Super Bowl. What did that tell you? They've got to get the rest. They've got to get home field advantage. They've got to play at Gillette Stadium, where quirky, interesting, scary, spooky things tend to happen
sure.
to opponents.
Headsets go out.
It's interesting how that always seems to happen. So that's the only reason that I say that they can make it is because they get the bye. And with the Chiefs, you never know. If they lose a divisional round game, which they are certainly prone to do over the course of their history, the Patriots suddenly host both games of the playoffs, and then we see them in the Patriots potentially in the Super Bowl again. But this Patriots team, this is fool's gold at the end of the season. Week 16, week 17, they beat up on a couple of rookie quarterbacks, a couple of bad AFC East divisional opponents, and went out in style against a coach that's not coming back in Todd Bowles. So if you think that the Patriots got healthy suddenly, I think you're whistling past the graveyard. The Patriots truly are the team that struggled against the Steelers, that got blown up by the Lions, that got blown up by the Titans, that got blown up by the Jaguars. They're just not the same team they have been in recent years. And this reminds me, I was covering the Patriots in Boston in 2009 when they ended up going 10-6 and losing the wild card round of the Ravens. That was a season earmarked by a lot of mile markers over the course of the season where you said, this doesn't feel like the Patriots. They had a couple of guys, Adalia Thomas, who Bart knows very well, and Randy Moss show up late to practice. There was a snowstorm late in the season. Belichick sent them all home, said, don't even come to practice. And that became kind of a big deal, like, wow, what's going on? This stuff never happens in Patriot land. And I feel the same way. There's not the same type of friction with the coaching staff, but there was a sense all that year in 09, this team just isn't right. And they lost in the wild card round, and it just felt like, okay, they've got to reset, and they did after that. That was the last season to me that made them feel this vulnerable.
And just the numbers, that's the last season they had this many losses in a year. That's the last season
Correct.
That Brady was this statistically mediocre in a year. There's a lot. The case for the Patriots is a simple one. They're undefeated at home. They are guaranteed to play at least one, and if they get past that one, maybe both playoff games at home. And in a conference where seemingly nobody's got playoff experience, like look at who those other quarterbacks are. You have Rivers and Luck as the 5 and 6 seed, but Watson and Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, they have a guy who has more experience than basically the rest of the field combined times two. That's the case. But if you're just watching them, there isn't really a great case. If you're just watching them, the case is, it's the NFL playoffs, anything can happen. They don't do anything great. That's their biggest weakness. Their biggest weakness isn't like the Chiefs, where they have a glaring weakness of defense. Their biggest weakness is you game plan for the Patriots, and nothing jumps off the pages. Well, this scares us. We have to make sure we stop this. I thought that would be Gronk. It hasn't been Gronk all year. They lost Josh Gordon. There's no real difference maker.
It's not even Brady.
It's not even Brady. Now, Brady will always scare you to a degree because he's the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't think we're going to disagree on that greatest of all time discussion.
Never mind.
Sure. But they, if they didn't have the jerseys on, they would look like the longest shot in the AFC playoff field right now.
But what scares me is they have versatility. They've been together for so long. So you think about Bill Belichick, you think about Tom Brady, what they can do is make you fight left-handed. So they're going to take away your best weapon, what you do well. And you have to be able to say, okay, I'm going to be able to counterpunch. And, you know, it's really the game within the game, the chess pieces that you have to be able to move when you want to try and come out and change your game plan. The teams that I believe has always beat the Patriots, and they had two game plans going in. They had the first half things, and then they had the things that they adjusted to in the second half.
What the Jags couldn't do last year.
To keep them off balance, because what we know that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady does well is they understand the situation. They understand, you know, they'll get you with a trick play. They'll try and score before the half. They'll try and come out and get up by two and force you to press. And then especially when you look at this young field of young quarterbacks, if they have those early mistakes where Bill can set a trap for you and you can fall for it, will you be able to recover from that? Because in the playoffs, the clock moves so fast. Everything is sped up in your heart rate and in the whole atmosphere. And you have to get past the mystique of what it is to play in Gillette Stadium. It can be intimidating.
Is experience a big enough factor where it could, you know, sort of make up for whatever they're lacking on offense or defense? I mean, we talk all the time about how the Chiefs have it all in this offense except no experience. I mean, do you think that's enough to hold them back and experience is enough to propel the Patriots forward?
Yes, because the Patriots have a very obvious game plan for themselves. Do not beat ourselves. Let the other team beat themselves. And that seems to happen all of the time. And they're really good at this. They will not turn the football over. They won't make mental miscues. They won't miss tackles or assignments. And that means you've got to be perfect. And especially at Gillette Stadium, it makes it really hard on opponents that haven't been there before. History, though, also tells us the Patriots are not winning the Super Bowl this year. We have not had a team lose a Super Bowl and come back to win one the following year since 1972, the undefeated Dolphins. Oh, wow. That's the last time this has happened. What does that tell us? It took historically perhaps the greatest team ever, at least one of them, to overcome what the emotional down is after you go all the way to the Super Bowl and then lose it, and then try to come back and do it again. The Patriots' history tells us they're not nearly as good as the 72 Dolphins. They're good, but they're just going to be the beneficiary of a very inexperienced AFC and a couple of home games potentially, but I don't see them getting to Atlanta.
But the other thing that has to concern you if you're a Pats fan is they had a few moments this season where they could have righted the ship, where it looked like, as long as we win this game, we're going to be the 2 seed and we're going to be okay. And they couldn't win that game. Now, they got the 2 seed anyway because Houston down the stretch tripped up a couple times unexpectedly. The loss to Philly, a loss to India a couple weeks prior to that. But the Dolphins game was the Patriots making a mistake that they typically don't make. And then they got a reprieve. And they got the Steelers game the next week. And they made one play the entire game on a busted coverage to Chris Hogan. Like, I would have more faith in the Patriots, even if they hadn't gotten the 2 seed, if down the stretch it had all come together. It didn't all come together. That even the Bills game they didn't play very well in. Now, the Jets game they played spectacularly. I will give them all the credit. But that was a lot about the opponent and a lot about the venue and a lot about guys getting ready for the offseason. The Patriots have had opportunities this year to say, oh, they're figuring it out. Like a few years ago when I thought the defense was a disaster, and then by December it's like, oh, and in December, number one scoring defense in football. They haven't shown that to me. Maybe they'll make me look stupid this year. Maybe it's going to be like, oh, my God, you picked against the Patriots. I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they're talented enough.
It's going to be about the matchups, right? Because I can see a guy like Lamar Jackson going in there, maybe having some pivotal fumbles, some turnovers, sure, things of that sort, which can get that momentum. And then you look up, like, how do we lose to this team? I can see Deshaun Watson doing the same. They won't lose, I don't think, to one of the younger quarterbacks. I think who they should fear, like I said, who I believe is going to be in the Super Bowl, is going to be that 4th, 5th, and 6th seed. You know, I know that 6th seed, you know, that.
So Colts, Chargers, Ravens, right, are you think the 3 best teams?
Only because Harbaugh doesn't fear, you know, the Pats, and they understand they have a history of being successful. They know how to beat them. And also the veteran quarterbacks, I think, can outduel Tom Brady. I don't know if Mahomes can come up to it. They've already lost to him this year, and I don't know if Deshaun Watson can step up.
They've already lost to him this year as well.
And Watt becomes a non-factor. I don't know what they have on J.J. Watt. I don't know if he's ever sacked Tom Brady in his career.
But the Chiefs and Texans lost really close against the Patriots. And remember, Deshaun almost went up there last year and beat them at Gillette Stadium. Yep. It can be done by those
guys. And the Chiefs had beat them the previous couple years, right, once in Gillette. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
According to multiple reports, Antonio Brown got into a heated argument with Ben Roethlisberger earlier this week. Brown reportedly threw a ball at Big Ben, walked off, skipped multiple practices, did not return all week. He did show up at Heinz Field on Sunday, however, expecting to play, and was told he would not be playing. He reportedly left at halftime in frustration. All right, Damon, what's your reaction to the latest drama in Pittsburgh?
Look, I don't know who's nursing hangovers watching us right now, so I won't scream, but this is the most Steelers thing ever. Right. Like, the most talented team potentially on paper coming into the season, at least offensively, ends up missing the postseason because time after time after time, they just kick the bucket. They just keep messing up. And for week 17, knowing you have to win, you absolutely have to win, and you must lean on your best players, and that includes Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown first and foremost. For Brown to be so self-involved, so self-indulgent, to have to throw a ball back at his quarterback because he's upset that, what, Juju is getting more attention or was voted team captain, it is just so silly and petulant to do that in a must-win situation and then be benched by the coach and then have to lie about it. They've got to lie about why he was benched, only for it to all come out. I like Mike Tomlin. I don't believe he should be fired. But this is such a poor referendum on Tomlin's leadership, on Antonio Brown's maturity, and the culture of the entire Steelers locker room.
I mean, they've been getting passes for so long because I can't believe that this is the first time. Whenever Ryan Clark goes on TV and says this is AB being AB and he thought that he was the wrong guy to get paid, well, that just tells me that they have a bad culture and they have a bad locker room, and then you want to add Le'Veon Bell and that whole situation to the mix. They have to really have a meeting about what they're going to do going forward because you can't get rid of them. So what are you going to do? How do you fix this situation? I'm surprised that somebody hasn't EK and poly this guy and punched him in the face because I can't imagine that he hasn't pulled this stick on some cornerback that was trying to, you know, guard him too hard in practice or something like that.
But I'll ask you, Bart, with a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and a quarterback that has won a Super Bowl and a coach, how does it happen that guys within the locker room don't care enough to need to win week 17, need to, the desire to get there? Why does selfishness like this happen?
I think there was an element with the Steelers, because if you remember during the Le'Veon Bell saga, there was one guy that consistently had L. Bell's back. That was Antonio Brown. I think there was this feeling amongst certain Steelers, not many, but certain Steelers, that you know what? You know when the team gave up on this season? When they didn't bring back the best running back in football or one of the best running backs in football. And you know why we've struggled this year? Why we went from 7-2-1 down to the playoffs? Our running game ran into a wall. And the other reason we lost some of those games was our quarterback threw horribly untimely interceptions and then went on radio and talked about how it was my fault, Antonio Brown. Remember that one? The pick against Denver?
Ben is not without flaw here. I totally agree.
And so I think that is a big part. People are going to lay this at the feet of Mike Tomlin. And I, like you, think Tomlin's an excellent coach. I also understand why anything that happens with the team, some of it's on the coach, or else why the hell is there a coach? So some of this has to fall at his feet. But there is an element of how good would Popovich have been if Duncan was always undercutting him? How good would Belichick have been if Brady were always undercutting him instead of doing the opposite of even when they didn't like it, publicly staying in line and supporting the coach, letting the coach rip them more than they rip anyone else so there's a trickle down. Tomlin's never had that benefit. He's always had to know that his quarterback of all players is going to be an X factor. And then he's got this wide receiver who, as talented as he is, has shown horrid judgment. I'm a guy, you've known me for 15 years.
Horrid judgment.
That is correct.
But expert at
it. But I also, it takes a big bridge for me to get to blaming a player for behavior. Because I think, yeah, young, rich, empowered, how would I act, right? That's always been how I felt. But even I would have known at that age, let's not Facebook Live something when Mike Tomlin could say anything. It's live to the world. Even I would know that even if I'm angry that it may be $80,000 missing from my condo, let's not allegedly throw furniture off the balcony, as Antonio Brown's alleged to have done, and almost potentially kill a small child. Like, these are all things we know, at least alleged to have done with the furniture thing. Like, he doesn't show good judgment. And the fact that he would skip the week of practices in what was a playoff game. If they win, they weren't necessarily in. But if they lose, they were definitely out. It was correct. A playoff game. That's horrifying, and sports horrifying. And I don't know what Tomlin can do. What can you do? All he can do is not play him, and which is what he did, and they damn near lost because of it.
The problem is that the best players for the Steelers are the ones that you cannot count on the most. It was Bell, mm-hmm. Brown, and Roethlisberger. And when you cannot count on those guys to make the right team decisions, you get what you have this year.
But where's ownership?
Hold on. With those three, there's the sense of it's me over we. With those three more than anyone else on that team, because all three of them make very selfish decisions, intentionally or not. I mean, Big Ben's out there throwing other guys under the bus. Lev Bell didn't show up for his contract situation. AB obviously did what he did. But let's just stick to Brown for a second. What happens now with him moving forward? Can he survive on this team, or have we seen the last of Antonio Brown?
I think he can survive because he's so good, because he's so dynamic, and the Steelers have not had a history recently of jettisoning really good, talented guys unless they want too much money. They'll usually bring you back if it's just a character problem or a distraction problem. Remember, though, this. The Steelers have gone through a lot of talented wide receivers that were me over we guys, whether it was Santonio Holmes, Plaxico Burress, go down the list. They've always figured out a way. They've always figured out a way to replace those guys. But, boy, in this case, I think AB is so good, and they seem to have such a long leash with him that he'll probably come back. It just feels like it's more of the same to me.
And it's going to be more of the same.
Well, I feel like the first time they can't move him, they can't move him right now, but as soon as they can move him, they're going to move him. But with that being said, that usually means that you're rebuilding, because Ben Roethlisberger has been hinting at retirement for the last couple of years. So I feel like they were really accepting this because they felt like they can have one more shot. With looking in the AFC North and what they've been able to do with, you know, the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, and with Baker Mayfield, I don't know if that window isn't almost closed, and we've seen the best years of Ben Roethlisberger and this Pittsburgh Steelers team consistently being in the playoffs.
This is, for this Steelers season, it is a systemic failure, starting with the GM and what happened with Le'Veon Bell, because even if you don't want to extend him, then rescind the tag and use that money elsewhere. To Mike Tomlin for losing whatever leash he had on the team, it finally letting go. To Big Ben with those weekly radio spots that today he's going to continue, and God only knows what he's going to say. To Le'Veon not showing up to Antonio Brown. That's how a team goes from 7-2-1 to out of the playoffs. Only the third team ever, through 10 games, have a record that good, not make the playoffs. The other two, you know what happened to them? Their quarterbacks got hurt. 95 Raiders, 93 Dolphins suffered a season-ending injury to their quarterback. That's why they missed the playoffs. The Steelers have no such excuse. Every opportunity to make the postseason. They couldn't. And if there wasn't, if between Tomlin and Roethlisberger, there wasn't three Super Bowls and five appearances or whatever it is, one of those guys probably would be gone. But because they have built up that level of cachet with the team, they won't be. But they can't just run this thing back next year.
I'm surprised that they survived with this level of dysfunction to win as many games as they did to even, you know, be at this point. I just don't understand. Where's the general manager in this? where's the owner in this? Because if he missed 2 days of practice, then I need ownership to come up, and we need to find him and bring him in and let him understand that we will take every dollar that we can out of your
ownership
pocket.
Ownership did reach out to him.
No, you find him. You got the your NFL security. You can find exactly
find
where
your iPhone
is.
App. You should
figure out find my wide receiver. Yeah, find my wide receiver.
I mean, you show up. Only way you can hurt Antonio Brown is by taking his money away from conduct detrimental.
Right.
I'm sure they probably may try and get that game check back, try and find him. But I'm trying to see where he could have potentially voided this contract because of his behavior, much like we see going on in Jacksonville. I'll see if I can try and get him out of there that way and get that salary cap relief back.
Damon, thanks so much for hanging out
with
us. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
Looking like Men in Black,
man. Day. Coming up, why is a quarter of the NFL looking for a new head coach? That's next. This is First Things First.
When I was 10 years old and I didn't get anything for Christmas, and my mom sitting the family down and explaining what great things were going to come from our lives and everything, that was a Christmas that stood out in my mind. Just being thankful for what we did have.
I am grateful for two things. The girls that I have at home and the boys that I have at work.
That no matter what background you come from, you have commonalities with your neighbor. That's what makes our show work. That's what makes all of us work.
Oh, I think that deserves a hug.
Aww.
Oh, there you go.
Welcome back. On Saturday, we got a big showdown, and the big D is Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. It's the NFC wild card game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Happy New Year's, everybody. So glad you're hanging out with us this morning. We'll get to the NFL coaching carousel in a second, but first, Gator Bowl down in Jacksonville, Florida. C.J. Riley of NC State makes the great catch for the touchdown.
His left hand being restricted, right hand goes up and gets it. No question it's a catch. That's an excellent play, C.J.
It's an NFL catch right there. Just a back shoulder turnover, put him on your back hip, levitation, like it.
Sticking with college football, trick play in the Holiday Bowl. Northwestern offensive lineman Trey Clark catches the pass, dives across the goal line for a 20-yard touchdown.
Fat man touchdown, Bart.
Fat man touchdown. It's supposed to be fat man dance, but you see that defensive back? He knew where he was like. He's like, you know what? I want to live.
Trey Clark now with one more career touchdown than Bart Scott.
Ooh, aww. Hater in the house. And you.
Aww.
Yeah, and definitely and me.
You didn't ask me if I scored in college. I did.
NBA Now Magic, Hornets second-year guard Malik Monk takes off.
He didn't even need to jump this high. It's just showboating.
You ain't never smelled the air up there unless you was in an airplane. You don't
know
what that's all
listen,
about.
Listen, I'm going to have to do the same thing with you that I did with Chris, which is bring in the video of me dunking in my basketball days.
What do you have?
I've never
dunked
like that.
What do you have, like five headbands on, two wristbands?
Me? I wore a headband.
You was that guy.
I wore a headband. Shaved head, too. Yeah, I was that guy.
Out there playing defense. Like, man, get this little gnat off me.
Absolutely. That is an excellent scouting report. That is exactly right.
Happy New Year's Day, everyone. We're back here with Brian Westbrook, and we are talking Eagles and the most popular backup quarterback in the league, Nick Foles. He did win their last three games. He did get them into the playoffs. And while Carson Wentz still hasn't been ruled out for the postseason, some are wondering if Philly should stick with Nick. We wonder that every day.
Doug
Peterson was asked about this yesterday.
Is it fair to say or safe to say that Nick's going to be a quarterback as long as you win?
For this week.
I mean, is there any scenario where...
There's no guarantee we're going to win this game.
I understand. I'm just saying if.
Yeah, I'll evaluate next Monday.
You already did this.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. Thanks for trying.
It is Doug Peterson pulling the Bill Belichick of press conferences.
Except he's smiling at the end.
Yeah, because he couldn't hold it.
They just love coach talk. They just say whatever.
But he's it's a little more verbose. All right, Brian, should the Eagles stick with Foles? Or you think they go to Wentz? What is the decision that Doug Peterson has in front of him here?
To me, there's no decision at all. Absolutely no decision. You have a Super Bowl winning quarterback that's playing well. All season long, 16 games, you're trying to perfect your team. You're trying to look for that gas to add onto the fire to make this thing an inferno, try to make this thing hot. And they finally found this for their offense in the last 3 weeks. The Rams, the Texans in the last game last week against the Redskins. They found this for the offense for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's Nick Foles. He's a guy that continues to make this ball roll. This offense looks totally different. Why would you ever change that? The momentum is rolling with this guy. You should never change that. And just imagine, if you're a veteran in this locker room, and you say, we're rolling right now, we're playing well, this is maybe my last year, Jason Peters, Malcolm Jenkins, Chris Long, all these older guys, Michael Bennett, and you're saying, listen, we're going to take out the guy that's had our team rolling and looking good for a quarterback that's been hurt. And at this point, Carson Wentz may be the future. The present right now is Nick Foles.
Well, what do you have to do to – what type of conversation as a coach do you have with Carson Wentz, who probably is a healthy scratch, because you may have to depend on him. And what does that game plan look if Nick Foles with those bruised ribs go down and you have to go to a backup or have to go to Wentz?
It's simple. Listen, Nick. Carson's playing well. Our team is playing well.
Other way around. Carson,
Nick. Yeah, Carson's saying, this is what I'm saying to Carson. It's simple. Nick is playing well. Our team is rolling right now. And if that doesn't change, then you'll be sitting on the bench. And hopefully, you're our future. We understand that. But at the same time, we have to play for the present right now. We have to keep this thing going. We have a chance at getting back. We have to take advantage of that.
So here's the thing. We know Carson Wentz isn't playing this week. We know that. The only way there's another game is if they go to Chicago and beat the best defense in the NFL, certainly the best defense in the NFC and the Bears.
In a tough road environment.
In a road environment, the biggest underdogs of the weekend. So, of course, you're not then, if they do have another game, benching Nick Foles, who would have then won 4 in a row, would have then won 7 consecutive elimination games dating back to last season. What I want to ask you is this, though. How far does Foles have to take this to change the conversation about who the future is? Like, what does Nick Foles need to do? Is there anything he can do, and what is it this postseason to where this offseason, when they're starting at a $20 million Nick Foles option, that instead of declining that option, letting him go elsewhere, they pick up the option and they field phone calls on a Carson Wentz trade?
Yeah, in my opinion, I still think Carson is the future, no matter how well Nick Foles plays. But if Nick Foles goes out and wins another Super Bowl, then the conversation changes.
So it has to be when. What if he gets you to the Super Bowl, gets you to the championship game?
I think that may be the point as well. I mean, if you get him to that Super Bowl game, then that conversation changes. And it may be that you trade Carson, or even if you sign and trade Nick, a lot of different things going on there. But I mean, you have to have that conversation if he gets you to that game, of course.
I really think for Eagles fans, this is simple. And for Carson Wentz, by the way, I would not want to get put back in this lineup, because you are going to be you're a 6-point underdog this week. If you win this week, you're going to be an even bigger underdog the following week. I think they are going to lose either this week or the next week against the Saints. I just think those are better teams they're up against, and it's on the road. I don't think this Eagles team would have gone to the Super Bowl last year as the 6th seed, having to play road playoff games. I think if you're Carson Wentz, the worst thing that can happen to you is Nick Foles beats the Bears, and then you get your job back, you get your head kicked in by the Saints, and everyone's blaming you.
Right.
You need for the city and the fans to see Nick Foles lose a playoff game. I think it's as simple. If Nick Foles gets to the Super Bowl, then you have to have a real conversation. Anything short of that, you're going to go with the bigger, stronger, faster, more talented number 2 overall pick, who's also, by the way, cheaper. He has that going for him as well, because he's still on his rookie contract.
But that's the reason why I don't think if you win this football game against the Bears and then have to go to New Orleans, that's the reason why you can't go back to Carson. You don't want to put that type of pressure on this young man. That's also the same reason why you can't bring Nick Foles back next year. You don't want that guy sitting on the bench
when
things go wrong for Carson. Fans are cheering, Nick Foles, get him back in the game. You don't want that type of pressure for your young future of your franchise type of quarterback.
No one right now is saying it's got to be Carson Wentz. I think everyone agrees that Nick Foles should play this Chicago game. I think everyone agrees play the hot hand right now, because they saw what playing the hot hand did last year. Who knows if lightning can strike twice, but it struck once with this team, and you kind of just let the beast keep going.
But they have a better chance with Nick Foles in the lineup, because I believe for some reason it's this connection between him and Peterson. This offense has a rhythm, and that gives this front 7 an opportunity to hunt. You talk about Fletcher Cox being able to come on and how aggressive he was in the pass rush against the Washington Redskins. What happened is they were converting first down, so it allows the defense to make sure that they can hunt. You know, they can let these pass rushers, you know, be able to fire off and protect this secondary, because this secondary is a liability, and they're playing much better because of the front 7. The front 7 is playing better because they're being able to get to the passer because of the rest. All comes back to St. Nick.
Why do you think this team, which has not looked like the defending champion team that most of us thought they would be all year, is playing better, not just in the passing game, in all phases of the game since Nick Foles took over. Why do you think that is?
A couple things is going on. They have much more of a balanced attack. Their offensive line is playing much better. Jason Peters, who has been hurt most of the season, is playing better at the left tackle spot. Lane Johnson is upset that he didn't make the Pro Bowl. He's playing much better. Brandon Brooks has been a Pro Bowl player all season long. So in the run game, they've been more productive. Doug Peterson has committed to that run game. Then when you look at the quarterback position, Nick Foles is getting the ball to everyone. He's getting everyone involved. And just imagine what receivers feel if you don't touch the ball for a quarter or for a half. You don't have a target. You're out of the game. But Nick Foles has done a great job of getting Alshon available, getting opportunities for Nelson Aguilar, still getting Zach Ertz to football, getting the ball to Darren Sproles, who's been healthy and helped his football team
the last couple
weeks. Is that
that he goes through all his reads, or is that the play calling?
I think it's part of the play calling. Doug Peterson has done a great job of getting his team ready every single week to play. But also, you have to give these guys a big-time opportunity down the field. Give Alshon an opportunity to jump over top of someone and catch the football. Nick has done that, where there's been times where Carson has failed to do that, and now the offense looks much more fluid when you get everyone involved.
Carson had become – he had gotten such a rapport this year in particular with Zach Ertz that it seemed like that was his first read, and Ertz was typically open, so it was his only read. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to get chunk plays typically from Zach Ertz. You got a lot of catches for 8 yards, catches for 9 yards. And the problem with that is, and we see this with any team that doesn't have chunk plays, it just takes one sack, one holding penalty, and all of a sudden your drive is stalled. With Foles, man, he is chucking that sucker deep. He's letting Nelson Aguilar make plays, Alshon Jeffrey. We haven't even said the name Golden Tate, because Golden Tate has been a guy who really hasn't been a major factor, but we know how good he can be. It's what makes this team dangerous, and it's why, as much as I think the Bears are the best team in the NFC, not named the Saints. But, man, the Bears got to be looking in this game saying, man, I sure wish we were playing the Vikings. Right. Like, I think the Bears are maybe wishing that the Vikings would have somehow won last week against the Bears, so they would be the sixth seed instead of the Eagles.
If you're an Eagles fan, the one thing you have to look forward to, you're playing one of the best defense, if not the best defense in the league. I think a lot of people would say the best defense in the league. You have some experience. That's the one thing that the Chicago Bears team does not have. Experience in the playoffs, being able to win. How does Mitch Trubisky respond to his first playoff game, first opportunity to go out there and win in the playoffs? For an Eagles team that went to the Super Bowl and won tough games last year, that experience, and you've been in the playoffs, you understand how it is. That experience certainly does play a part into it just a bit.
And I love Lane Johnson against Mac, and I love Peters against Floyd. I think you run at the little guy and see what he can do, see if he can handle that smoke.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.